everybody, I'm Hannah Heath, author of The Terebinth Tree Chronicles and Skies of Dripping Gold, and today we are joined by indie author K.L. Plus Pierce. Kristen, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Awesome. I'm really excited to have you on. So for anybody who doesn't know, Kirsten is the author of Two Lives, Two Choices, which is a Christian sci-fi novel that's really good, so you guys should read that. And she is also the creator and co-host of the hashtag WIPFinds, which is on Twitter every Sunday. So that's just my shameless plug if you want to join me, because I'm co-hosting it. So if you guys want to join in on it, that would be awesome.
Yeah, and also somewhat also shameless plug, I'm also the co-host for the hashtag author book club with Beth Wengler. So there's the other hashtag game I kind of host.
Yeah, so check those out. I'm going to link those below. Because hashtag games are a lot of fun, and Kirsten's always really good at setting them up, and so we're she's just a hashtag game machine. All right, so for anybody who has never watched or listened to this channel before, this is Chat with Indie Author, where every month I have on a new indie author, and we talk about their writing process and their books, and how they manage to balance their writing life with their work life. So, and then at the end we have questions from viewers that were written in using the hashtag chat with indie author, and then we'll pull those and talk about those at the end of the segment. All right, so all that being said, Kirsten, are you ready to get into the questions?
Yep.
All right, so first one, which I know you totally weren't agonizing over at all, was can you give us a brief description of your novel?
Yeah, she knows I was agonizing and asking her for help on this even just yesterday. Okay. All right. So Two Lives, Three Choices is a book about a girl named Krista. She's 16 years old and she's going to a regular Earth high school. But when two new students show up, she starts getting visions about this war on an alien planet where both high-tech weapons and superpowers are fair game. And so she decides to figure out, okay, why am I seeing these visions? And when she finally gets the answer, she realizes that, okay, I can't run away from this. I need to decide where my loyalties lie in this conflict and what am I willing to do for the ones I care about.
Awesome. Yeah, you did perfect. Good job. and it is a really good book. And you are actually working on this sequel right now. Is it a series or is it just two books?
Do you have a it's going to be a series.
Okay. Do you know how many books are going to be in the series?
I mean, not entirely. I'd say I have at least five total planned out.
Wow.
Or at least, okay, book five isn't really planned out, but I know it's going to be there. I have rough ideas for the first four books though, so.
That's awesome. All right. So outside of your writing, what is your day job?
I am a data systems engineer at one of the national labs.
Wow. So we have talked about this before, like off camera, and I know this is a new job for you, so you're kind of transitioning into balancing your work and your day life. What does your writing process look like in a regular week?
Well, I'm still trying to figure out what a regular week looks like. So I know I've been here. You think I'd have it down in a couple of months? Yeah, no, I don't. But what I at least did in college when I'm somewhat trying to mirror here is like I usually try to have Sundays as my dedicated writing days. I work better when I, you know, have a focused amount of time where I can dive in. I don't do well if I could just do it here, there, and everywhere. But I am trying to see if I can at least try to do like 20-minute spurts in the evenings during the weekdays. We'll see if that works out.
That sounds good. So when you do sit down to write, do you have anything you do to get into the mood? Like music or a place you like to listen or a place you like to write or food or drink or anything like that?
Well, I usually just write at home. I haven't really tried the coffee shop writing yet. I just figured there's too much noise. So I'm like, okay, I'm focusing. Do not disturb.
Yeah, I'm always really impressed with the authors who do go write in coffee shops, because I'm like,
that scares me.
I'm too introverted. There's too much noise. What if somebody walks up to me and asks me, hey, what are you writing? And I'll just be like, no, don't ask me that. What are you doing?
Well, you could just do what Nate Philbrick does and fling hamsters around.
That's good, yeah.
Or spaghetti or whatever it is these days.
Kumquats, I don't know.
Let's see. Usually before I start writing, though, I usually pray because I think I always want God to be involved in my writing. As for drinks, I don't know if I have a particular drink, although I do like vanilla chai, so maybe that could be considered my drink.
Yes. Awesome. All right, so we're going to move into talking about your book. And I knew that we have to start out by talking about Dion, because that is literally like everybody's favorite character. He's the anti-villain in Two Lives and Three Choices, and everybody both really loves him and is also just super annoyed with him at the same time, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, everybody seems to have that reaction.
Yeah, so what made you decide to write an anti-villain?
Well, it was kind of funny because I was originally 16 when I did the original write of Two Lives, Three Choices, and at that point I actually didn't know what an anti-villain was, so what I was aiming for was kind of a sympathetic antagonist, because I'd seen how like everybody was liking Loki despite him being the bad guy technically, so I wasn't trying to recreate Loki in any way, but I was kind of trying to go for that vibe.
Well, I think you totally succeeded in that, so that's cool.
Yay!
Yeah, so what were some challenges, if any, when you were writing Dion? Because I have never written an anti-villain before, so I always wonder, was that a difficult process?
In some ways it was, and some ways it wasn't. Part of it was that, sorry, he's just too complex of a character to get it in straight. I'd say there was challenges in trying to, I guess, make him sympathetic while making it obvious that he was definitely a villain or anti-villain in some ways, kind of trying to find that balance between, like, okay, he has very good reasons for doing what he's doing, but he is still a jerk anyways.
Right.
So I think the hardest part was finding that balance.
Right. One of the things that I was really fascinated with his character, was, like you said, he needed to have a good reason for being bad. So, like, kind of minor spoilers for this character, but one of his reasonings was that his family was living in poverty, and he was kind of angry at the God or Jesus version in this book. And so that was one of the things that kind of pulled him away, because he was so angry and didn't understand, and then he went and joined the dark side, basically. That was probably not a very good description. It's way better in the book. But I remember being really struck by the fact that you actually took that on in your book, because I think a lot of Christian fiction doesn't handle that issue of people struggling with God's goodness in the face of evil. So was that something that you specifically planned to put in?
I think as the story went along, I did. I'm a pantser, so some of the things just kind of come as I'm writing. I think that was kind of part of the making him sympathetic while, you know, still making him strictly on the dark side, as you were saying. Because I think that is something that people struggle with, and it helped make him more realistic as a character. So I guess it was somewhat planned, but developed on his own as it went along.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. And then another question that just occurred to me, sorry, I'm kind of going off of our talking points that we went over a little bit, but was Dion always Krista's brother?
He actually was. Even in like my earlier drafts, they were always going to be brother and sister. I'm almost curious why I had that image firmly in my mind, because I'm an only child and I don't have siblings, so I'm wondering, okay, what gave me this idea to to a book about siblings. I have no experience with this whatsoever.
Right. But it turned out really well. So did you have to go and like interview siblings or something? Or how did you write that if you are an only child?
Well, both my parents had a lot of siblings, so I kind of had some idea what the relationship was like just from hearing stories from their past. I think there was also a little bit of just me, there was a little bit of me winging it as well, because like I didn't have any concrete stories of, you know, like me with my siblings, but I had an idea of what it was like. It was sort of, I mean, love-hate relationship, but ultimately love was the stronger of the two. Right. Is that right? You have siblings, right? Is that kind of a good summary?
Yeah, it's like you really love this person, but sometimes you just want to smack them because they're really rich. But the love does win out, though.
So yeah, that's kind of what I was trying to go for, I guess. So informal interviews, I guess, was the answer to your question.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, so circling back to anti-villains, do you have any tips for how to write a good anti-villain?
Well, I actually am going to be writing a blog post on that. It should be up by the time this video is published, so you can definitely find more tips there. As for just a brief answer now, I'd say the trick is kind of still finding that balance, like making sure that, you know, the motives are good. Like with Dion, it's I'm trying to help my sister have a better life, but he does some very not noble things in order to achieve that goal.
Right.
So I think trying to kind of go for maybe sort of an end justifies the means type of mentality would be a good way to go for that.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. So just kind of focusing on the motivation first. And was there ever a pull for you to make him better than he actually was? Because I would imagine, because he is such a compelling character, that you would have at some point wanted to make him a little bit more redeemable than he actually is, or was that not a temptation as you were writing?
I mean, that's a tough question, because I think it's like he has a lot of redeemable qualities are just buried underneath because he's kind of more of the I gotta get this done, here's what I gotta do to get it done, let's do it. So, and I think you kind of see that there is a little bit more redeemableness towards the end of the book.
Yeah.
And I think I'm planning on expanding on that in future books, but I think book one, let's make sure he's definitely somewhat more of a jerk.
Right.
So we see that there's going to be a fight.
Ooh, all right. So for everybody watching or listening, her blog post about tips for writing anti-villains is linked below, assuming that she finishes it in time. So we'll see. Now the whole internet's going to know if you didn't write it on time, Kristen.
Well, that's pretty good motivation for me not to fall behind this time.
All right, so everybody go check in the description and see how that went. So.
Yep, right. I need to get done in time now.
Yeah. So for Two Lives, Three Choices, it's a Christian sci-fi, which actually is not a super common genre, but I was really impressed by how you wove the Christian aspects into the story. Both with the world building and the characters and the motivation, and it just all kind of fit really naturally. So I was wondering, why is it important to you to write Christian fiction?
Well, that actually was kind of the reason why I got into writing in the first place. I always wanted to use my writing abilities to glorify God, and so Christian fiction's kind of seemed like the natural way to go. I was kind of aiming to go in the vein of C.S. Lewis, actually. He was kind of one of my big inspirations for that. Like, because for the Chronicles of Narnia, I mean, there's obviously Christian parallels in it, especially if you read the Bible and can look more deeply into some of it. Like, Horace and His Boy, I think, had a few more subtle ones. But, I mean, overall, there's still an engaging story and can be enjoyed by Christians and non-Christians alike. So I was kind of trying to So I guess my goal with Christian fiction is, in writing it, is kind of to serve both ends of the spectrum, make an enjoyable story for people who might not be Christians, but so they can get exposed to those beliefs, but also help people who are Christians maybe explore questions about their faith that they haven't really thought about before, and maybe help them get deeper into their faith as a result.
Wow, that's really cool. So if that was kind of your goal from the very beginning, did you start out with specific Christian themes that you wanted to make sure worked into the book? Or did they just kind of, since you're a pantser, did they just kind of come as you were writing the story?
I think they kind of came as I was writing this story, but I think it came a lot easier with, you know, the relationship between Krista and Dion and their different views on faith. And so it kind of came out in a way that wasn't necessarily preachy, but was able to explore both sides of the debate pretty well, I think.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. That was probably my favorite part, that it was very clearly like there were two sides and you were just more exploring them than kind of explaining them, I guess, which is always cool. And you had mentioned earlier that you pray before you write, which I thought was really cool. And I think that really does come out in your stories, because they do have these really strong Christian themes, but they're woven in really well. So there is clearly that's you and God working together, which is awesome. So I just wanted to say that's really cool.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm glad he's helping me out with this, because I would not be able to do it on my own.
Now, another really interesting aspect of this book was you did something cool in that you rewrote it and then released a new edition. So what was that process like? How did you decide what portions you were going to rewrite and which ones you were going to leave mostly the same?
Well, actually, E.B. Dawson was a huge help with this, because she helped kind of point out some of the strengths and weaknesses in my story. And there was a few things that, like, even when I released it the first time, I knew were somewhat weak that I wanted to fix. Like dialogue, for example, I knew it was kind of on the stiff side in my first draft. And also, there were other things that I wanted to do too, like go in more in depth with some of the characters. Like, in a couple of reviews, it mentioned that Alzer was kind of hard to connect with. So I wanted to try to remedy that a little bit, kind of allow you to get more in his head. Mm-hmm. I'll still keeping the focus primarily on Krista and Dion, because that's the relationship that was the main focus of the book. But I guess I was also exploring other aspects as well. Like you mentioned that, you know, Krista's fears weren't as well-developed as they could have been in, I think, your first review of the book. So that was also something I wanted to kind of go into as well. So it was kind of mostly characters and then rewriting some scenes to allow for more depth into those characters. And also to, I think, I was a little heavy on the foreshadowing in my first draft, so I wanted to fix that.
That's great. So did you literally just have a list of things you were wanting to go and fix? Was that?
Not like a formal to-do list. Like, I had some big picture items that I wanted to fix, like the dialogue and connecting with Elzer, that sort of thing. But there are also some things that E.B. Dawson mentioned that would be good. Like she mentioned, like she confirmed like some of the visions that Krista see were it was a little too obvious where it was leading. So I wanted to fix some of those, and kind of just some other scenes like the attempted kidnapping that I expanded, or like the prison scenes that I wanted that she thought that could be expanded upon a bit, and it would allow for some greater tension as well as more character development as well.
Got it. So I was really impressed by all of the things, because you were completely successful in like switching all of those things completely around. And I was thinking about this morning about, because I'm in the middle of just rewriting a short story, and that's a short story, it's not a novel, so it's quite a bit easier, and it's hard. So what were some challenges that you experienced as you were rewriting it? Was it hard, like, organization-wise, or did you ever find that if you, like, tweaked one thing, then you had to go and mess with something else? What were some of the biggest issues, and how did you not die as you fixed them?
Let's see. Well, it did help that I had a deadline because I was planning on releasing the rewrite with E.B. Dawson releasing The Traveler, so that was September 15th. So that helped me not die and get slogged down by the rewrites, which I currently am now with the sequel.
Rewrites are horrible.
Yes, they are. Why are they a necessity? Let's see. And I think one of the bigger challenges was because there were some scenes that needed to be rewritten, but there were other scenes that didn't. So making sure that all the scenes flowed, like they still were all cohesive, while still improving the overall quality of my writing and the story. I think that was the biggest challenge. The other biggest challenge was getting a hold of E.B. Dawson's edits because she actually wrote in my book and like did line edits. But when she was trying to send me the copy back, I don't know what happened, but it took like a month for it to get there. And somehow the package, like the book was fine, but like the package was ripped open and it's like, I don't even know how that happened, but.
That's so weird.
So that was the other challenge.
Yeah. At least it got there. That's good. I would have been nervous that it was just gone forever.
Yeah, thankfully she had some like notes on a Word document that like some general notes, which were definitely helpful in figuring out, okay, which parts needed to be changed the most.
Awesome. All right. So as far as like writing a book and then going back and redoing it and re-releasing it, under what circumstances would you recommend this to other authors? Because I know some authors are always kind of debating whether they want to do that. So do you think there are some circumstances where you should and some that you shouldn't?
Yeah, that's kind of tricky because when I originally was, you know, releasing the book, like I was adamantly against trying to rewrite it because, you know, I finally got this done, time to move on to the next book. But, you know, like I did that when I was, you know, about 16-ish, and then, you know, a few years later, like close to my 20s, it's like, you know, I really could do a lot better with this. And I think the circumstances which I decided it would be good to rewrite were, like, it was the first book in a series, and I hadn't released any other books yet, so it wouldn't be a huge, like, continuity nightmare if I've changed things up a bit. And then at the time I didn't have a very big following, so there wouldn't be too many people impacted if I, you know, re-released the book. And also the other circumstance was it would give me another opportunity to market the book because, you know, again, when I first released it, I had no idea what I was doing or like all the good ways to market. I was definitely a newbie on Twitter, for example, which is where I get my largest following. So I think in those circumstances, it's okay to rewrite a book. I'm not sure if I would recommend it doing like for sequels or anything like that, though.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that's really cool that, so you wrote it when you were 16, is that correct? And
yeah.
Did you publish it also when you were 16, or did you?
Might have been a couple years after that.
Okay. Well, that's really cool because I know a few authors who have mentioned that oh, I published this when I was too young and now I should just take it off of Amazon completely and pretend it didn't happen. But I think the rewrite is a really good solution because it's a good story. So if you just rework it a little bit to be up to par with your current writing, then that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, no, it totally did. So that's awesome. So as far as indie publishing, you mentioned when you first started, you didn't really know what you were doing. What? I don't think any of us did, though, so that's okay. So what indie publishing what aspects of indie publishing have been the most challenging for you?
Let's see. Besides the rewrites, probably the marketing, because I mean, I have ideas for what to do, but it's kind of that whole work-life balance thing. It's like, you know, in college, it was impossible for me to do too much because it's college, there's homework, and it never ends.
Yes, I know.
And even now that I'm in the working world, where, I mean, technically I have more time because I don't have, like, I can clock out in the evenings and actually have weekends free, not just one day I have to fight for to have off. But I guess the challenge there is, I mean, one, having time to figure out marketing techniques while also grocery shopping, paying bills, and all that fun adult stuff. Yeah. And also just, yeah, trying to find that routine where I can work it in. Because there's stuff, a whole bunch of stuff I want to do, but I don't want to do anything too fast because then I'll get completely overwhelmed and go even crazier than I already am. Let's avoid that.
Right.
So yeah, for now I'm just starting off by making sure I can get my blog both posts out consistently. And then, you know, and then doing the two hashtag games that I'm doing now. And hopefully I can expand as I get a better hold of that, you know, elusive work-life balance.
Right. It's so hard though. I always think, like, we just need assistance or something, like somebody who will just, like, go and remember to tweet things or something.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's, like, those, you can schedule tweets, like, with Hootsuite and stuff, but then you actually have to remember to put the tweets in.
Right.
Yeah, I kind of forget that part.
So sad, yeah. I do, too. I actually, like, I got locked out of that account because it's been so long since I've used it, and I don't even know my password anymore. So I'm like, I don't know what email address is hooked up to it, so that's just dead now. Yeah. Can you list some indie authors that you enjoy reading or that have inspired you as you go along this indie author journey?
Oh, man. I mean, probably everybody at PFW for sure.
Oh, which I forgot to mention. Kirsten is a PFW author as well. Phoenix Fiction Writers. It's linked below. Yay. Okay.
Yeah, and I'm the website manager, so therefore you must check out the website. So yeah, everybody at PFW, because I think they were all kind of like the first indie authors I read. I think you were actually the first one I read.
Yeah.
And then I think it was E.B. Dawson soon after, then Nate Philbrick, and, you know, Kyle Roberts was, it went down the list.
Right.
And then outside of PFW, Caitlin Buxton probably. And her Warriors of Arlen series, because I was actually, it was kind of weird. Like, I always seemed to like watching sci-fi shows, but reading fantasy. So it was kind of, although that seemed to have changed slightly with E.B. Dawson's creation of Jack books.
Right.
And also J.E. Prazi's Malfunction. Yes, I'm doing all the shameless plugs here.
Yes. No, go for it. They're all really good books. Actually, I don't think that I have had the chance to read Caitlin Buxton's books yet, but I keep seeing them around and they look awesome.
Yeah, they are. I mean, the cool thing about those books, I mean, obviously the fantasy elements and the quest components, but it also shows how she really grows as a writer through each book. I mean, yeah, she has flaws, but she, you know, learns from her mistakes and she continues to improve with each book, and that's pretty cool to see in a writer, I think.
Yeah, that is really cool. What are your plans, future plans for publication? Do you plan on going full on indie or traditional at any point? What is that gonna look like for you?
I'm currently planning on staying indie for now, but if God has other ideas, I'll go with it. But for now, I'll probably stay with indie because I kind of like the creative freedom that goes along with it. I mean, you know, being able to at least somewhat plan out your own schedule and also design your own covers. That's so
Right.
I kind of like the creative freedom that comes along with it, even if I have to do the marketing on my own.
Yeah, one tiny drawback of indie publishing.
Just a little bit. A little bit,
yeah. I think that's literally everybody who's come on here has said it's the marketing, and it is. Marketing's horrible.
Yeah, I mean, the publishing's okay. It's the before and the after part.
Right.
That's the hard part.
Right. So it's just the tiny sliver of easy, and then everything else is just like misery.
Yeah, the rewrite and marketing, the two evils of indie publishing.
Yeah. So now we actually can get into questions from viewers. So people wrote these in using the hashtag chat with indie author. Let's see what we have. So Emrys Merlin has two questions, but one of them was about Dion, and we kind of already answered it. So we're going to answer the second question, which is, how much does computer science and biology influence your writing?
That is a good question. I think it's a little, I mean, in some ways it's subtle, in some ways it's not. Like, like with Krista, she's a bit of a, you know, somewhat of a computer nerd, and also, I mean, in the book, her father's a doctor, so she's kind of interested in the biology as well as the computer aspect. So I think she inherited those from me.
Right.
Other ways, I guess, it might have influenced that I went with sci-fi for the book instead of fantasy, because, again, I usually read more fantasy than I did sci-fi, so I was kind of surprised when I went the sci-fi route instead of the fantasy route.
Right.
I guess other than like topics or anything like that, I guess it would also help my writing process, because I tend to be a little bit more logical when I write. And I think that's definitely influenced by the computer science and arguably the biology as well, because there's kind of more of a, like, you know, step by step to either get the instructions executed or, you know, to get the experiment run. Kind of being able to, like, I always need to have things clear in my head in order for me to keep going forward. Like, I had to go back in one of my rewrites instead of forward, which annoyed me, but it's like, okay, if I don't get this character's arc settled out now, I am just going to be in this. My brain's going to be spaghetti. I'm not going to be able to do anything, and it's going to be a continuity nightmare going back again. So let's just go back and get that all cleared up.
Right.
So I guess it influences my writing style as well as my topics that are covered.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because if you are more linear thinking, but then you are still a pantser, so you don't outline.
Nope.
That's so funny.
Yeah, I think my brain like is a sort of a hybrid between, because I'm, for those of that are interested in like the Myers-Briggs stuff, I'm an INTJ, but I'm actually pretty neutral on the T and the F. So I think that comes out in my thought process a little bit, because like you'd think I'd be an outliner, because like even in like college days, I prefer to have to-do lists and get everything checked off. But for some reason, I couldn't do that when it came to writing. It's like having an outline was limiting my idea flow. So it's like, forget that. Let's just wing it.
Right. So you're just more an INFJ with writing, which is funny, because that's what I am, and I don't outline either. So,
yeah, I guess there you go. My brain's interesting.
Yeah, that's cool. And I think you did in the hashtag game, which this is not meant to be a plug, but it's going to end up being anyway. In WIP Finds, you mentioned last week that Krista, had to do some research on like herbal remedies and whatnot for book two, so it looks like there's going to be a little bit more biology influences in that one. Is that true?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, yeah, she's gonna kind of go back to her kind of her knowledge she's gotten from like her father being a doctor and kind of just getting all the ideas of human anatomy and stuff, but also herbal remedies, which is something she was really able to kind of connect with, because I guess, minor spoilers, she couldn't use the normal healing technologies on a rat at all.
Right. So I'm really excited to see how that turns out. Because we probably should have led with this. You are a biology minor and a computer science major, which is where that question came from. Okay. Next question, and this is the last question we have time for, but it's from E.B. Dawson. And she asks, what's different about the second book, and what are some things we can look forward to?
Yeah, I think this is a subtle hint to get working on your book, Kirsten.
Little bit.
Yeah, she's been encouraging me to work on the book a lot, so thank you for that. Let's see. Well, one of the things that'll be different for sure is, like, in book one, it primarily took place on Earth. There wasn't much actually being on Arete at all. This time, it's kind of the opposite. Basically, they'll be on Arete basically the whole book. There might be, like, a chapter where they go down to Earth really quick. I'm not quite sure how that's going to play out or if they'll, you know, actually see that chapter on screen, but... Yep, but yeah, they'll mostly be on Arete the whole time. And let's see, as for other things you can look forward to, let's see, well, it takes place about a year after the first book, so you'll see Krista has matured a little bit, and she, rather than maybe panicking or kind of just freezing up like she did a little bit in book one, you'll see her figure, okay, this is not a great situation. Let's figure out how to solve this. Kind of going more along a logical train of thinking and not giving into her emotions as much. She still has meltdowns because she's human, but so you can just see that character growth a bit. And you do also get to see more of Dion in this one, in a way. I mean, they don't... Krista and Dion don't interact with each other as much per se, but circumstances happen where Dion has to do a little research of his own and figure out, okay, was my sister actually right about certain things? Because if she is, then we're in trouble.
Right.
So there's going to be a little bit of him trying to figure that out.
That sounds awesome. I'm really excited about that. So, not to pressure you at all, but do you have, like, an idea of when it's going to come out? Because I'm excited to read this.
Well, I'm currently aiming for sometime end of this year, so. Because, like, I have all the main plot points written out in my head, and I did actually have to do a little bit of outlining this time for, like, just for character arcs, mostly. So I at least know where it's all going. I just need to actually write it.
Right.
So I do know where it's going. And I mean, the end is in sight. I just need to start writing more.
That's always a good way to finish a book, though. All right.
Yeah, book three will be a lot easier. Oh. That's mostly actually already written because... for those of you who don't know, I have issues with being concise, so it's kind of book two ended up being books two and three.
Oh, well, that's kind of convenient, actually, so.
Yeah, it actually worked out pretty nice, I thought, and thankfully, I don't think book three is going to have to be as difficult as book two, because that one actually focuses more on what's going on in Dion's head and another character who I can't say because of spoilers.
Okay.
But because it's kind of focusing on what kind of the results of book two, it's not going to, like, it's more from that perspective, so it's not going to be as influenced by what's going on with Krista and Alzer and everybody else quite as much. So I don't think even with all these book two rewrites, it's going to be drastically, it's not going to be as drastic of a ripple effect in book three. So that'll be able to get out faster. Hopefully. Please.
Yeah.
This book is nuts.
That's awesome. Well, I'm really excited for book two. And that's actually all of our questions. So can you tell us where, or tell people where they can find you online so they can follow you and say hi?
Okay. Well, my website is, KalePierceBooks.com, and you can also follow me on kind of everywhere, it seems like. I've got Twitter, Goodreads, Facebook, Instagram. I do also have a Pinterest, but I haven't used it as much. I need to start using it more again. Yeah. I think those are the main ones.
Awesome. All right. So all of those are linked below. So everybody go follow her on those places and say hello. Read Two Lives, Three Choices. It's great. And I'm not saying that you should badger her about getting the second book out, but if you want to...
Totally, yeah, PFW's got that covered already. And when she says badger, it's literal. Like, if you see random badger gifs sent to me by any of the PFW authors, when I made that request, they took it literally. I'm also very grateful I said badger and not bug.
Oh, that would be horrifying.
Don't get any ideas from anybody who just said that.
Right. All right. So if you liked this video, give us a thumbs up. If you're listening on iTunes, leave us a review. And like I said, go say hi to Kristen, say hi to me. We always love talking to you. And if you have read any of the books that Kristen mentioned in her, you know, indie authors that she likes segment, tell us about it, because that's always fun to hear who's read what story. All right, so I think that's all we have for you today. But thank you so much, Kristen, for coming on. It was great hearing about your writing process.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was fun.
Yeah, my pleasure. All right, so we will see, or I will see you again next month. bye.